puts cell phone camera things on Uva, but he doesn't trust them. So he walks around with a thick wad of paper copies inside his wallet instead, held together by a rubber band. Shows everyone he meets, even the people who work at the florists. Spring turns to summer, and by the time autumn sets in, the annoying journalist Lena moves in with that Audi-driving fop Anders. Uva drives the moving van. He has no faith in those jackasses being able to back it between the houses without ruining his new mailbox, so it's just as well. Of course, Lena doesn't believe in marriage as an institution, Uva tells Sonia, with a snort that seems to suggest there have been certain discussions about this along the street. But the following spring, he comes to the grave and shows her another wedding invitation. Mursad wears a black suit and is literally shaking with nervousness. Bravana has to give him a shot of tequila before he goes into the town hall. Jimmy is waiting outside. Uva is his best man. Has bought a new suit. They have a party at Amel's Cafe. The stocky man tries to hold a speech three times, but he's too overwhelmed by emotion to manage more than a few stuttering words. On the other hand, he names a sandwich after Jimmy, and Jimmy himself says it's the most magnificent present he's ever had. He continues living in his mother's house with Mursad. The following year, they adopt a little girl. Jimmy brings her along to Anita and Rune's every afternoon, without fail, at 3 o'clock when they have coffee. Rune doesn't get better. In certain periods, he is virtually uncontactable for days at a time. But every time that little girl runs into his and Anita's house with her arms reaching out for Anita, a euphoric smile fills his entire face, without exception. Even more houses are built in the area. In a few years, it goes from a quiet backwater to a city district, which obviously doesn't make Patrick more competent when it comes to opening windows or assembling IKEA wardrobes. One morning, he turns up at Uva's door with two men more or less the same age as himself, who apparently are also not so good at it. Both own houses a few streets down, they explain. They're restoring them, but they've run into problems with joists over partition walls. They don't know what to do. But Uva knows, of course. He mutters something that sounds a little like fools and goes over to show them. The next day, another neighbor turns up, and then another, and then another. Within a few months, Uva has been everywhere, fixing this and that in almost every house within a radius of 4 streets. Obviously, he always grumbles about people's incompetence. But when he's by himself, by Sonia's grave, he does mumble on one occasion. Sometimes it can be quite nice having something to get on with in the daytime. Pravana's daughters celebrate their birthdays, and before anyone can explain how it happened, the 3-year-old has become a 6-year-old, in that disrespectful way often noted in 3-year-olds. Uva goes with her to school on her first day. She teaches him to insert smileys into a text message, and he makes her promise never to tell Patrick that he's got himself a cell phone. The 8-year-old, who in a similar disrespectful way has now turned 10, holds her first pajama party. Their little brother disperses his toys all over Uva's kitchen. Uva builds a splash pond for him in his outside space, but when someone calls it a splash pond, Uva snorts that, actually, it's a bloody pool, isn't it? Anders is voted in again as the chairman of the Residents Association. Bravana buys a new lawnmower for the lawn behind the houses. Summers turn to autumns and autumns to winters, and one icy cold Sunday morning in November, almost 4 years to the day since Parvana and Patrick backed that trailer into Uva's mailbox. Parvana wakes up as if someone just placed a frozen hand on her brow. She gets up, looks out of her bedroom window, and checks the time. It's 8:15. The snow hasn't been cleared outside Uva's house. She runs across the little road in her dressing gown and slippers, calling out his name. Opens the door with the spare key he's given her, charges into the living room, stumbles up the stairs in her wet slippers and, with her heart in her mouth, fumbles her way into his bedroom. Uva looks like he's sleeping very deeply. She has never seen his face looking so peaceful. Cat lies at his side with its little head carefully resting in the palm of his hand. When it sees Parvana, it slowly, slowly, stands up, as if only then fully accepting what has happened, then climbs into her lap. They sit together on the bedside, and Parvana caresses the thin locks of hair on Uva's head until the ambulance crew gets there and, with tender and gentle words and movements, explains that they have to take the body away. Then she leans forward and whispers,
Give my love to Sonia and thank her for the loan,
into his ear. Then she takes the big envelope from the bedside table on which is written in longhand to Parvana and goes back down the stairs. It's full of documents and certificates, original plans of the house, instruction booklets for the video player, the service booklet for the Saab, bank account numbers and insurance policy documents, the telephone number of a lawyer to whom Uwe has left all his affairs, a whole life assembled and entered into files. The closing of accounts, at the top, is a letter for her. She sits down at the kitchen table to read it. It's not long, as if Uwe knew she'll only drench it in tears before she gets to the end. Adrian gets the Saab. Everything else is for you to take care of. You've got the house keys. The cat eats tuna fish twice per day and doesn't like shitting in other people's houses. Please respect that. There is a lawyer in town who has all the bank papers and so on. There is an account with 11,563,013 kroner and 67 ure from Sonia's dad. The old man had shares. He was mean as hell. Me and Sonia never knew what to do with it. Your kids should get a million each when they turn 18, and Jimmy's girl should get the same. The rest is yours. But please don't let Patrick bloody take care of it. Sonia would have liked you. Don't let the new neighbors drive in the residential area. Uwe. At the bottom of the sheet he's written in capitals, "You are not a complete idiot." And after that, a smiley, as Nazanin has taught him. There are clear instructions in the letters about the funeral, which mustn't, under any circumstances, be made a bloody fuss of. Uwe doesn't want any ceremony. He only wants to be thrown in the ground next to Sonia, and that's all. No people, no messing about, he states firmly and clearly to Parvana. More than 300 people come to the funeral. When Patrick, Parvana, and the girls come in, there are people standing all along the walls and aisles. Everyone holds lit candles with Sonia's fund engraved on them, because that is what Parvana has decided to use most of Uva's money for, a charity fund for orphaned children. Her eyes are swollen with tears. Her throat is so dry that she has felt as if she's panting for air for several days now. The sight of the candles eases something in her breathing, and when Patrick sees all the people who have come to say their farewells to Uwe, he elbows her gently in her side and grins with satisfaction.
Shit, Uwe would have hated this, wouldn't he?
And then she laughs, because he really would have. In the evening, she shows a young, recently married couple around Uwe and Sonia's house. The woman is pregnant. Her eyes glitter as she walks through the rooms, the way eyes glitter when a person imagines her child's future memories unfolding there on the floor. Her husband is obviously much less pleased with the place. He's wearing a pair of carpenter's trousers, and he mostly goes around kicking the baseboards suspiciously and looking annoyed. Parvana obviously knows it doesn't make any difference. She can see in the girl's eyes that the decision has already been made. But when the young man asks in a sullen tone about that garage place mentioned in the ad, Parvana looks him up and down carefully, nods dryly, and asks what car he drives. The young man straightens up for the first time, smiles an almost undetectable smile, and looks her right in the eye with a sort of indomitable pride that only one word can convey. Saab. This recording of A Man Called Uwe by Frederick Backman was presented by Dreamscape Media. Text copyright 2014 by Frederick Backman. Translation copyright 2013 by Henning Koch. Sound recording copyright 2014 Dreamscape Media LLC. This recording was produced by arrangement with Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster Incorporated. Thank you for listening. Please check www.dreamscapeab.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.